Welcome to another episode of Planning You Can Trust podcast. I'm your host, Eric Oh, Certified Financial Planner with Chatterton & Associates. Today, we are honored to have two new guests on today's episode. We have Holly Nabier. She's an associate attorney for the law offices of James F. Roberts. We also have David Hilliard, who is an enrolled agent with the Granfield Tax and Business Services. For those of you who aren't aware of our office structure, we have a three-in-one unique approach. We've got tax planning, we have estate planning attorneys in our office, we also have financial planners all working together on your behalf. And so we call that concept Planning You Can Trust. And just want to go ahead and introduce Holly, David. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having us here today.
It's a pleasure, guys. And so we just recently had our joint seminar, and we talked about some recent law changes and policy changes in 2020 that may affect a person's financial retirement and tax and estate planning. I would like to take this time to recap some of the takeaways we shared and make sure that our listeners are up to date with what we know at this point. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. We know that one law change in particular is going to affect a lot of clients and a lot of people out there. It's called the SECURE Act. Holly, can you help us understand some of the changes of the SECURE Act and what it brings?
Sure. So the SECURE Act is arguably the biggest piece of legislation affecting retirement accounts in the last decade. And historically, prior to the passage of the SECURE Act, we were able to see individuals leaving their retirement assets, IRAs, 401ks, to their loved ones, their children, beneficiaries, and those individuals would be able to stretch those benefits over their life expectancy. But on December 20th, 2019, the SECURE Act was signed into law, and it's effective for those dying January 1st, 2020 and later. So the law is effective as of January 1st of this year. And the new law requires that all IRAs, all Roth IRAs, and all qualified plans, so 401ks included, to be distributed within 10 years of the plan participant's death. So this is a huge change because compared to the old law, where we were able to stretch those benefits over these different individuals' life expectancies, we now have this rule that requires draining the retirement account within 10 years of death. So there are some notable exceptions here, and there's really five of them that I'll briefly go over today. And the first exception is spouses. So if your spouse is the beneficiary of your IRA or retirement account, your spouse can still use their life expectancy. They will not be subject to draining the account in 10 years. So they'll be able to use their remaining life expectancy. The other exception is for minor children. And so minor children would be defined as anybody generally under the age of 18. And then once they reach the age of 18, that minor child would have another 10 years available to stretch those benefits. But there is another kind of sub-exception underneath that, and that is for individuals who haven't identified a specified course of education. And those individuals can stretch it up until the age of 26 and then experience the 10-year stretch thereafter. Two other exceptions are disabled beneficiaries and chronically ill beneficiaries. The Internal Revenue Code has very kind of lengthy definitions of what is considered disabled or chronically ill, but I don't think they're perfect definitions, so I do anticipate we'll probably have to get some clarity through private letter rulings in the future on what exactly disabled or chronically ill is. And then the final exception would be individuals who are not more than 10 years younger than the employee. So those are the five exceptions.
So just to be clear, thank you for that thorough explanation, Holly, but just to be clear, for the 10-year rule, it's not that they have to take out 1/10 each year. They could potentially take it out all in the 10th year, right?
That is correct. So it still does present us with some planning opportunities where if a beneficiary knows that they might be in a lower income tax bracket or retiring in a given year, they might then withhold all distributions until that year and then choose to take, you know, most of it or all of it out in those lower income tax bracket years.
Got it.
Right. So in addition to that, so Holly, I consider that to be the bad news of the Secure Act, because it mainly happens on, that mainly affects beneficiaries, correct?
That is correct.
So one other thing that the Secure Act does, and we'll step back for a second, because in the past, IRAs, when you turn 70 and a half, that kind of triggered two things with an IRA in particular. One, it triggered your RMD, or your required minimum distribution, that you had to now start taking distributions from your traditional IRA. And it also stopped the ability to make contributions. So if you had taxable wages, if you were working into your mid-70s, you could not contribute to an IRA anymore. So the Secure Act kind of eliminated the 70 and a half limitation for making contributions. And we noticed that people are working longer, they're living longer. So this is a benefit to the taxpayers overall. So after 70 and a half, there's no longer a restriction. If you're earning taxable compensation, you can still make an IRA contribution. And then they also pushed out the age of your required minimum distribution to 72. So if you turn 70 and a half prior to December 31st, 2019, you're still on the old rules. You still have to take that distribution at 70 and a half. But if you're turned 70 and a half after that, you get to wait till you're 72. A few other things that happened with the Secure Act is Congress passed some extender bills, mainly giving some benefits to people taking out early contributions from IRA to help for a birth of a child, or if you had some costs from a disaster area, notably the California fires, if you had to take some money out, it allowed you to take money out of those IRAs early and not pay that 10% penalty. They've also been expanding the usability of those 529 plans. In the past years, they allowed you to pay for elementary school, not just college, elementary, high school, that sort of thing. Now they're allowing you to pay up to $10,000 a year of your school loan debt, your college loan debt, which is a big benefit. Some of these things are not do not apply to California, so we just got to talk to your tax advisor to make sure that they apply.
So, I mean, definitely that's quite a lot to take in, right? So let's try to break this down a little bit one by one, because, you know, Holly mentioned a lot of things. David, you mentioned a lot of things. You know, one thing in particular, Holly, that you mentioned was the elimination of the stretch IRA provision.
Right.
Can you give us an example of how this might affect, like, an everyday client of yours, if something comes to mind?
Sure. So a lot of our clients tend to have quite a bit of their wealth in their retirement assets. And it's not unusual to see a client that has an IRA that has larger value than the equity in their home. So these retirement accounts, historically, when the children inherited them, we'd be able to see years of deferred tax and compounding interest and that stretch over the child's lifetime. But now, just recently, last week, we had a client who had a seven-figure retirement account. So it was over $1 million in value. He had a single child, just a single beneficiary, and it was his daughter, and she does well, her husband does well, so they're already in a relatively high tax bracket, and now she has this extra $1 million of income that she's going to have to report sometime in the next 10 years. And so whereas prior to the passage of this act, she would have been able to stretch that and really mitigate the income tax consequence, now it's something that is really unavoidable and requires a lot more planning and being intentional about when and how you're taking these distributions out.
Got it. So, you know, from a tax standpoint, what do you think, Dave?
I think there's obviously some advantages and disadvantages. And like I kind of hinted on before, the disadvantages is on the recipient end of this. Sure. For if you're a non-spouse beneficiary of an IRA, definitely a big disadvantage. In the past, when you can stretch it over your life, that's a huge, you can possibly pass that IRA on to your kids as well, if you were careful in planning. So there's a definite disadvantage there with the Secure Act. Some of the advantages, I think Congress has recognized that people are working longer, they're living longer, and the ability to still contribute while someone's working in their 70s allows people to build that IRA more so that they'd have more funds out into their retirement.
Right.
And pushing out that distribution age to 72 adds a little bit longer, a little bit more time for it to grow, allows you to take a little smaller amount of distribution over time.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely one of the benefits that I see. In reality, from experience, from my own experience as a financial planner, what I've seen is that even though we wish that children would do the lifetime stretch, the vast majority of children, if they are not restricted, end up distributing the whole IRA before the 10 years is up anyways. So if they're going to spend it, they're going to spend it in the first 5 years or so. And so a lot of times that is the going case. So for those families, it may not make as much of a difference, but for those that do have the larger IRA balances and a single or just a handful of beneficiaries that are receiving it, this can potentially become a tax time bomb for them, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the things that we are really looking at is on a case-by-case basis, everybody's tax circumstances are a little bit different from each other's. Their retirement assets may vary quite a bit, but, you know, as a general note, we are seriously looking at Roth IRA conversion strategies. We've always looked at them in the past, mm-hmm. but with the passage of the SECURE Act, we think that Roth IRA conversions definitely deserves another look at it for somebody that may have refused to do it in the past. We may even want to use some more of the IRA assets during our own lifetimes instead mm-hmm. of planning on transferring them to children. In the past, we've always thought, you know, these IRA assets, whatever's left over, we can leave them to the children. And we kind of coached clients to do that in the past also, but going forward, we may change that mindset and actually encourage clients to draw down more of their retirement assets during their lifetime versus passing it on to the children. So, you know, these are all some things, along with maybe encouraging workers to look at Roth 401k plans instead of traditional 401k plans at their work. And so these are just some things that we are kind of recommending in the current space, because the SECURE Act is a fairly new law, so we're still trying to discover what the experts are saying. That's why we're talking with you, Dave, and that's why we're talking with you, Holly. You know, and I just want to reiterate that in our office, we know that no single advisor can look at all aspects of a new law that is passed and know exactly how that's going to affect each client. So that's where we really try to work with, you know, multiple professionals in this office and discover what we can do best for the client. Outside of the SECURE Act, there were a couple new proposals that we discussed during the seminar. One of them made it on the ballot, one of them didn't. Holly, do you mind just giving us a quick run through of some of the possible law changes that we might be looking at?
Sure. So the good news is that the recent California estate tax proposal, it did not make it on the ballot. But what the proposal held was that there would be a 40% tax or estate tax on estates over $3.5 million. And that would be a California statewide estate tax, which would be, you know, kind of in conjunction and right along with the federal estate tax of $11.5 million. So this all gets doubled for married couples. So the $3.5 million was proposed to be doubled to $7 million for married couples. And the federal exemption is, of course, $11.5 million per person. So for married couples, $23 million. So it did not get on the ballot this time, which is the good news, but the bad news is that it is very likely that it will appear in some way, shape, or form on an upcoming ballot because, you know, this is California and we can expect that. So as to the $11.5 million exemption, what we want to note is that that is scheduled to sunset on December 31st, 2025, and at that time, the exemption is going to revert back to the prior $5 million per person exemption, but indexed for inflation, which will really be about $6.5 million per person.
Another law that did make it onto the ballot is the repeal of the Prop 13, the revision in relation to commercial properties. So as it stands now, property taxes is based off of the purchase price, and it's only reassessed a small amount every single year, and the property tax you pay is based off that small assessment going each year. Now, for residential, a lot of people in California are familiar with Prop 13 because it keeps their tax bills low every year. Well, what this will do, if it passes, it'll repeal that Prop 13 benefit on commercial properties. Mm-hmm. So your storefronts, your mm-hmm. big box stores, anything you go, right. expect them to be paying a lot more in property tax, because they are going to have a reassessment every 3 years on the fair market value of the property as it goes forward. It's not going to affect residential areas, so people with rental properties don't have anything to concern about yet, but this is just going to affect commercial properties at this time.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Holly. So again, we'll go ahead and wrap it up there, guys. I mean, we definitely had a lot of discussion today, and you know, that was our quick summary of the seminar that we just had in January. We believe that the key to well-rounded financial decision-making is open and direct communication. For anybody that might have questions about what we discussed in today's podcast, you know, feel free to reach out to us. You know, that's why we have the resources that we have in this office. If you have a question, feel free to schedule an appointment, come in and meet with one of our advisors. We'll point you in the right direction. If you want to stay updated with us, please visit our website, www.chattertoninc.com. That's chattertoninc.com/resources. It's a great resource center. We'll have podcasts like this up there and running, and any kind of new articles, law updates, things like that. We'll try to keep you guys as up to date as possible. If you want to schedule an appointment, give us a call at 714-572-2050. And again, I just want to thank again Holly from the law offices of James F. Roberts and David Hilliard from the Granfield Tax and Business Services for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.